right. Well, good morning. True to the teacher in me, I like to use your time well. So I think while people are gathering, we'll do what I always call a little lanyap. Does anybody know what lanyap is? What is it? A little something extra. I'm from Louisiana, and lanyap is a big word in the culture. So whenever I'm running a meeting or doing things, while people are gathering, I throw in a little lanyap so the people that are there aren't bored and wasting their time, but the people who came in didn't miss anything. So I see some different faces from last week. I'm Julie Smith, and I'm helping Sarah, who's somewhere nearby, teach a class on the Enneagram. So this one was billed as a slightly deeper dive, and maybe you are ready for a deeper dive, and maybe you're still just trying to find your number. So I'm just curious, how many of you came this morning and feel like, I'm pretty sure I know the type I lead with? Okay, and how many people are like, I just usually go to Sunday school in the Colquhoun room, and I don't know who you are or what this is, but I'm sitting here. Okay, no, you were here last week, right?
But I still don't know.
That's okay. It's okay if you don't know. It took me, like, I think 2 or 3 years to figure out my number, so you're in good company. So, all right, well, we will get started. Last week, we went over a couple of numbers, so I'm going to do a tiny refresher for people that weren't. And I felt like our ending, when Dixon spoke about his type of the seven, was very poignant, but also that we didn't really get to bring it to closure. So I'm going to do maybe a 5 or 6 minute recap that I think won't be boring, and it will help you if you weren't here. So I started here with this picture of the cross, and I mentioned last week that while I use this a lot of different ways and a lot of different places, and I've trained teaching staff and people to use it in the workplace, which I think is great, my favorite place to use it is in a Christian setting, because I believe that properly used, the Enneagram can help you really see how to be and stay in the presence of God in your daily life. So you may be using it at work, and if you work at Wake Forest, that might not be how you're using it. But for me, it's really been a journey more into the depths of spirituality and sort of the face of God. And so since we're at church, we get to use it that way. So I began with the cross. And I just wanted, this is just going to be super fast. But last week, we went over three types, and we did it with real people who all represented their number very well. The five we went over, these are all in a triad called the head, which simply means that their preferred way or their most natural way of being in the world is to use their head. Okay, they solve problems and in three different ways. So the five, it's very obvious, is the observer. They tend to, someone asked about this in the Myers-Briggs, so they're not necessarily connected, but the five tends to worry that they're not going to have enough. And they like to observe, take in information. They don't necessarily like to have to put a lot of things out. In some of my trainings that I've been going to, you'll see librarians, researchers, they like to collect information. And I said last week, and some of the fives reached out to me, I said, do not ask a five to a party and say, I don't know when it's going to end. That is torture for them. You can say, I need you for 30 minutes, or I need you for 3 hours. If you say, I need you for 5 hours, they're probably going to say no. So they are our observers, and they are able to really see a whole situation, and that's why the virtue is non-attachment. They're able to really be objective, keen observers of the world, and so some of us will turn to fives to get some really good information on what's going on. We also did the six, Darby. Sally Wells represented the five last week, and I thought was really poignantly on point with that. Darby represented the loyal skeptic, which is type six. Type six looks for safety and security, and they do that fairly obsessively. And they like to plan ahead, scan the environment for what might go wrong. They lead a lot with one thing happens, and they're way out here. It's called worst-case scenario thinking. We all do this sometimes, but sixes do it fairly incessantly, and they're using their head. They're planning, they're scheming, they're trying to stay safe and have 100 different options that they have concocted in their head. They also tend to ask a lot of questions. If you sit in a meeting with the six, they might keep saying, what about this? What about this? And you're finally like, I don't know, but we're going to keep going. But they can tend to get a little bit stuck in their planning and their thinking and being a head type. Their virtue is courage and faith. So when a six really digs down and feels the presence of God and the courage that they feel and the ability to face their fears and the faith it creates, it's very, very powerful. And so once a six has developed courage and has developed faith, it creates incredible safety and support for people around them because they've really done some work and they've really dropped down to really be in the presence of God to have those because they don't have that naturally. And then the other type we went over last week, type seven, Dixon represented that for us, the Epicure. And he did a really good job of sevens don't want to miss out. They are looking for the next dopamine burst. So they are planning in their heads for how can I have fun? What can I learn? What can I do? If this is not going great, well, that's okay. I'll just go over here. And they're planning, but they're planning for something very different than the typical six. And I think Dixon did a really good job. They're sort of best case scenario. So it's a nice balance to the six. Their virtue is constancy and work. And so when a seven is able to really calm and dig in, it's very, very powerful. So you'll see that as we begin to go through the nine different types over the course of this class, you will see that the virtue, I believe, is God-given. I don't believe it's just hard personal work, but I think the journey of spirituality is sort of a dance between allowing God's presence and using your will. And it's kind of a mystery, I would say, of how we really know God. But it's part effort and part relaxing and allowing God to be there. So I see we have a few new faces and some people returning. And I actually don't really know. That's one thing when you're presenting, you don't know. But I'm curious at this point if you all have any questions or anything, because we're going to launch into the next set of three, which are heart types. So our goal today is to cover type two, type three, and type four, which all lead from the heart. But before we go off, does someone have a question? Yes. Fear of missing out. So sevens have a strong case of FOMO, which is kind of social media speak, but they're always, if they're here, their struggle is not to be there. And to sort of always want to know what's going on. You have a question?
Can you elaborate a little further of how this determining your type gets to the point of feeling you're more in the presence of God?
His question is how, as you're determining your type, does this get you more into the presence of God? So we only have 30 minutes. But that, literally, if I planted a question, I would have planted that. So no more questions. I'm going to show you the next slide. That's a miracle. So I texted Sarah this week and said, do you mind if I start the class? Because I didn't get to finish with the next step. So the step I wanted to go to last week was tying these types together as head types. And so in three different ways, they use their head to keep themselves in their normal pattern. Okay, that's it. What I didn't get to talk about last week was steps to bring you into more depth. So that was where I was going to start. Then, when I got the, whatever we call it now, this week at St. Paul's, coming up at St. Paul's, and it said Sarah was preaching, I said, does anyone want to speak for 5 hours in a row? And she said, not really, so go for it. She was not unhappy, so... But next week, I'll be at Mardi Gras with my little lanyard, so it'll be Sarah. So I wanted to put this up. It's the nine types. And I think, Sarah, did you copy a picture of this? So at the end, you can pick up the paragraphs that help you type yourself. You can also pick this up. And today, we're going to be doing type two, the helper, type three, the performer, and type four, the romantic. And this is the same picture I used last week. But if you look over here, the feeling triad, and that's why it's called a deeper dive, rather than going over every single number in sort of a starter way, there's some presupposition that you've had a little experience with the Enneagram, even though some of you haven't. I think it's fine. And I like this way, because if you're trying to determine your type and trying to determine what does this actually have to do with knowing God, I think the triad helps. So twos, threes, and fours, in different ways, are our emotional sensors. They lead with a very open-hearted, they privilege feelings, they often know how you're feeling. They may or may not translate to knowing how they're feeling, but they are going to plan and keep their pattern, which when I say your pattern, I think that's something that actually keeps us from God. I think when we interrupt our pattern and begin to feel a little bit more open, a little bit less habitual, that's when we really begin to find the presence of God. But fortunately for me, some people that know a lot about this have thought about that very question. So the slide I wanted to end with last week is actually a perfect start. So I mentioned last week that I've been pursuing some training through something called the Narrative Tradition of the Enneagram. So this comes from them. I ran into some people at Whole Foods this week from the class at the checkout line. And they said, well, what about this Enneagram workshop and what about that Enneagram workshop? There are Enneagram workshops everywhere. I just decided that I didn't mention this morning, but I lead with six. And I also think I have a pretty strong five wing, which likes to gather information. So when I started wanting to learn about the Enneagram, I didn't want to just read books or go to random workshops. I wanted to have it add up to something. And that was how I embarked on this whole certification process. But there are many ways to learn, and there are many ways to find out about it. But the Narrative Tradition gives you this binder at two of the weekends. And so some of this information came from there. So where I wanted to end last week, and probably would have begun anyway, is the five A's of going deeper, which I think will help. And just to be fair, how a number that's nine types on a circle leads you into the presence of God is not exactly a 45-minute class on Sunday morning, right? So I hope that if this whets your appetite, the clipboard and the pen are over there like they were last week, where you can sign up your name and your email. And Sarah and I are committed to creating forums here at St. Paul's that allow people with your question and your desire to go deeper, because I've really found you need to do a certain amount of work yourself with your type, but being with others of your type is also incredibly helpful. So the five A's, just super briefly, awareness. So the first is, I have a pattern, okay? So for the seven, I think we saw that the pattern is looking for fun. That's the sort of the main gestalt of the seven. So as a seven, someone that has that pattern would maybe see that and think perhaps they should develop constancy, and rather than constantly jumping and going, that sometimes there's more to be learned by digging down. And even though sometimes that's a little bit more uncomfortable for a seven, that for them, they're creating awareness. And the word that we use a lot, that many of you in the Episcopal Church are familiar with already, is the inner witness. So any of you that have studied centering prayer or even mindfulness, that's creating your inner witness, that you can take even a baby step back from yourself and see yourself. So that there's a piece of you that's looking back on how you're responding. And I mentioned last week wholeheartedly, so I will take this opportunity again, it's all good. So as a six, I often jump to worst case scenarios. So that can be great if you work with young children and you can prevent a lot of things. However, I don't need that all the time. So I can see that pattern, but I'm not trying to, I'll never not have that pattern. So allowing and accepting, I had last week the whole circle that we're all already in the center of God. And so you don't want to shame your pattern or make yourself feel terrible or chastise yourself, and that's going to have a little bit to do with your type. But most people, a pretty good way you found your type and your pattern is that you don't like it, and you have to take some effort to embrace it. So that's the step, allowing and accepting. So for me, it would be, okay, I just jumped to a worst-case scenario. Let me just allow that. And allowing, I think, is a way of relaxing. And often, I think, we're so defended and so in the moment trying to move ahead that we don't allow others or God in. So I think the allowing and accepting, I kind of look at it as this. Just sort of a huge exhale, which leads to the next one, appreciation. And in the case of the Enneagram, the appreciation is, I am my type, and I have my patterns, which kept me safe. These patterns go back to my childhood, and I am grateful for the fact that they allowed me to become a healthy individual, and now that I can appreciate them and see them, I can move on to the next one, which is action. So the big piece of this is to give you choice, and that you don't have to always go with the pattern you have. And for me, that's the spiritual experience, because if any of you know your pattern, it is not going to be an act of my will for me to stop my planning. That has not worked in over 50 years. That's not. But for me, sort of quieting down and waiting on the presence of God has given me a strategy and a tool. And then the final A is adherence. And so I think it's easy to sort of come and read a book. And I mentioned last week that I believe the number that you lead with is the door to the house. And so I'm very hopeful that here at St. Paul's, those of us who are interested in numbers and find our number will take our numbers and walk into the house and live together so that we can create adherence. And that I think it's in the sharing of our type and in the vulnerability. It takes us, I mean, you saw, those of you that were here last week saw that the people who said their numbers, there was a certain amount of vulnerability there to get up and say, this is how I roll. But you know, if you are not a six, and Darby's response, I love to, what are you doing when you're not planning or looking for worst case scenario? Does anybody remember what she said? Nothing. Like, that's what I'm doing all the time, right? But if you're not a six, you're thinking to yourself, well, you don't need to do that. Like, that's okay. Right, because you're planning for something else. And so as you dive into this and embrace all nine types, for me it's been a picture of how much we need each other and how much my other number friends give me hope that I can take a step out of my six fear and my six scheming, because other people are just like, we don't have that. But when it's what you have, you can't imagine any other kind of world. So that's a very incomplete answer, but it's a start. And there's some practices, and if we get through the types, I did invite some types again, and they may be feeling a little nervous, so I want to be sure we get them. And then at the end, we can talk a little bit more about adherence. But that's a pretty big topic. So, okay. Oh, you know what? I'm going to go out of order, which I'm prone to do. When I used to teach junior kindergarten, whenever I would say, I have an idea, my assistant would be like, oh God, she's going to throw her lesson plans in the trash and we're going to go off on an adventure. Okay, so I'm going to start with type four because I want to go backwards and you'll see why. I mean, and it's a circle. Remember, there's no backwards and forwards. That's why we went over that last week. The fact that this is a circle and not a flat line. If you weren't here last week, I had a slide of a line. If I took the numbers 1, 2, 3, up to 9 and put them on a straight line, that wouldn't feel the same as the circle, right? So I believe that this is really a unifying tool. So fours are the romantic, and they tend to be really good barometers of people's feelings. They tend to be very in touch with their feelings. They can do that so much that they can constantly be on a search and never finding. So they can look a lot for the ideal. And then if they get the ideal, they may be pretty quick to analyze and think, I don't think this is the ideal. And so they can also tend to be on the melancholy side because their feelings are big. All of our feelings are big, but some of us head types especially are pretending their feelings aren't there. The gift of fours is they are feeling their feelings so much that they can tend towards being more melancholy. They can appear dramatic, but they're also very authentic. So if you see a head type, 5, 6, or 7, and say, how are you feeling? They're probably going to say something like, fine. And if you say, no, how are you really feeling? They're going to be like, I just said I'm fine. But if you ask a 4, how are you feeling? You might get something much more robust because, again, they lead with their heart. And 4s of all types, I think, in different ways than 2s and 3s, really are, their feelings are very accessible to them. They can tend to be envious. Chris Copeland tells a hilarious story of every time he drives by someone's garden, he's like, I wish I had that garden. I wish I had that garden. I mean, I don't do that. I just drive by it, and I like the garden, and that's the end of it, right? So you see how in 9 different ways we create patterns that then we reinforce. But if it's not your pattern, you are free. So the goal, and I think moving towards God, is about freedom. And I think this tool helps us find choice. So their virtue is equanimity. So when a 4 has really explored this and really fallen deeply into the arms of God, they are going to be a very balanced and very, very in-depth person. And so that's kind of the gift they give us. So true to our promise, we have a 4. Glenn has offered to be our 4. Do you mind coming up here? This is a really nice crowd of people. They're all just people. We're all just people. Here's a microphone for you. Just don't talk to you. So they got questions ahead of time, but the questions were just designed so you're not in the moment off guard, but it was basically, how does the desire to find a perfect state or way of being play into your everyday life? What role does longing play? But feel free to just riff off.
So for me, longing and always searching for an ideal is a constant. Mm-hmm. And I sort of chuckled to myself when you said, once you hit an ideal, you start analyzing it. Is mm-hmm. this actually an ideal? Sorry.
Thank you.
For me, always sort of searching, if I hit what may be somebody else's ideal, is it my ideal? And I have a pretty strong 5 wing. So I instantly will start pulling facts and be like, dip, 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 no, and keep going. So I don't know if I answered your question, but
yeah. The other part of this is, what are you doing when you're not longing for the ideal?
Sleeping.
Okay, so you see the pattern there. That's why I concoct that question, because when you hit on the person's type and you say, what are you doing when you're not doing this? They're like, are we in another language? The other question that came up is, how did you come to know that you were a 4?
So this is actually kind of a funny story. I'm also a part of the GLADS group, and they are very into the Enneagram. And for 2.5 years, I actually thought I was a 6. I read it, and I was like, oh, this makes sense. This is great. And then I went to Canuga and went to Sarah's Enneagram workshop, and there's a test that has the paragraphs on it. And she's like, read the paragraphs, and which one makes sense to you? And one of them I literally wrote next to it, get out of my head. And ever since then, it was sort of like, kind of got hit with something. I was like, wait a minute, no. This is, the other things, yes, I can see how they make sense. I see the pros and the cons and try to approach from all angles. But really, the 4 is just like, no, it's literally how I'm always, like, other things make sense through that lens. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it doesn't, like, you might as well be speaking another language to me. I mm-hmm. suddenly don't understand.
So I like the way he said, other things make sense through this lens. So it's not that you don't relate to other types. Of course you do. I mean, we all have pieces of the types. So is there anything I haven't asked you that you would want people who are either typing themselves or trying to understand to know about type 4?
One thing for me, the 4, is I see it as the individualist.
Right, that's another. Some, they are slightly different words.
Romantic has a very, like, oh, it was Valentine's Day, so for my beloved, I had 4 dozen roses, and Cupid was hanging out, and that's not, no.
Talk about the individualist, then. How does that resonate better for you?
I try to always, I look at everybody, irregardless of age or how I know you, as an individual, and I look at their strengths and their weaknesses and always try to pull that and try to make myself better, than always trying to be more, be mm-hmm. enough. Mm-hmm. My five wing kind of has me go down paths that are atypical. Mm-hmm. Like at one point I was a ballroom dance instructor just because mm-hmm. I felt like doing it.
Good
it
to know.
Kind of makes me a little different. Knowledge that other people don't have, but it also makes me how my flower is different from the rest of the garden.
Mm-hmm. So they're, one of their underlying premises is I am unique. Do you hear that, England? I am unique. And he is unique, right? But it's like a strength overplayed sometimes for the four that can begin to feel isolating, or I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, if other people can do it, I see less interest in doing it myself.
Right. Right. All right. Thank you. That was perfect. Thank you for being willing to share that with us. So I also want to give a disclaimer. If you're sitting in this class and you're just here, you know, because the Colquhoun Room thing, and you like coffee, and you don't like it, that's fine. There's other ways to God. I have a friend who I love dearly who can't stand this. And I was like, great. There are so many ways to know God. Like, that's fine. I have a child who calls it a binary reductionist tool. And I said, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because that's why I'm so passionately pursuing it. I think on Facebook and other platforms, it is a binary reductionist tool. But I also want to say, just because someone here and others at St. Paul's and the people sharing today are fairly passionate about it, this is not truth with a capital T. If you're skeptical or don't like it, then that's fine too. Okay, so we're going to go to type three, which is interesting because we didn't have one, but now we do. But before I bring her up, she's very brave because she wasn't prepped. And it's Lee Smith, but I have to tell a funny story. So when I decided to embark on getting my training through the Narrative Enneagram, the first workshop I went to was in Cincinnati. This is not super convenient, let me just say, to get this training. It's not the easiest thing ever. So I get on the plane, and I go to Cincinnati, and I've never been there, and I Uber out to this monastery that the cab driver can't find. It's like 20 degrees. I'm from Louisiana, like I mentioned. So I get there. So, you know, most types feel a little destabilized by all that, and I don't know what to expect. I don't know what's going to happen. And I walked in and signed my name, Julie Smith, and I looked under it, and there was a name, Jane Smith. And I was like, oh, this happens all the time. My name is so familiar. But then it said that Jane Smith lived in Chapel Hill, which was, there weren't a lot of people in Cincinnati. People are from all over. I mean, all over. So I was like, okay, this is great. I mean, I'm sort of half from North Carolina now. And I meet her. Guess who it is? It's Lee's daughter. And so we have a really big time. And that's all right. We don't need that right now. She proceeded to sort of share her journey with the Enneagram and her mother's journey with the Enneagram. And I think I can say, without being too defacing of it, that she thinks that their family would have been better. Jane leads with type 8, which you're going to talk about next week, which is the challenger. And so the challenger is always out there looking for a fight and looking for different things. And so I think that maybe that's not what her mother's going to speak to today, but I think that it, you know, you could see how that might change the family. This is offline, so I'm not going to spend too much time worrying about that. For some reason, that's why we don't always love technology. But I'm going to tell you a little about the three. So I have a slide, but not right now. So type three, which is what Lee leads with, is the performer, also known as the achiever. They like to be checking boxes, doing lists. Lots of people that are very, have high profile jobs are type three. So the whole thing that they have is achieving, getting things done. They don't like to slow down. They're a heart type, because we're talking about the heart triad today, but you might not feel like it because they're so busy doing their lists that they can feel less heartfelt. The thing to know about threes, and sometimes at these weekends, it just says it's offline, so I don't know. sometimes type threes will say what they wished people asked them was how they feel, but it's a little bit harder for them to be vulnerable because they want to be seen as a success. So I have several children, not the binary reductionist son, this is a different son, who's in the military. So you could see, and he leads with type three, he feels like. So you can see how being in the military and being success-oriented, it's not really a great place to be at the Naval Academy or on a nuclear sub saying, I don't really think I can do this. That's not particularly honored in that environment. It's like, well, you better figure it out really quick, and they're not there patting your back. So he did some studies with what types are successful in the military, and it tends to be these achieving. But what I love about the threes is while we rely on them and we love them for all that they get done, they really need the space to open up and to be vulnerable. And I think that might be some of their awareness is struggling with that. So, Lee, are you still willing? Now that I've talked about your whole family, I cannot tell you how happy I was. And then when I went, I said it's not easy, I went to Menlo Park for a week this summer, which is right near Stanford, and Jane was there again. And it just, you know, it felt so good because it just feels like home. There we go. Oh, let's see. I think it will. I don't know why it just went offline. There we go. I think it, there we go. I don't know. Okay, well, we're not going to worry too much about that. We have Lee, who's better than anything. But Lee's not prepared, so I'm going to help her. But because she's a performer, guess what?
I like to do everything perfectly.
And even funnier, Lucy Painter in a minute is going to be our two. And I told her when I got here that I didn't have a three, and she found me one. Okay. So well, I'm going to just start more simply than the pre-canned question that I had. How did you know you were a three? And when did you begin to get interested in that?
I think I have been studying this thing for maybe 10, 15 years, something like that. But and the way I know I'm a three, I mean, I think I'm kind of an unusual three because most threes are achievers, as Julie was saying, big career people, and that was never me. But I really do think that in the earlier part of my life, it was really important to me to think that I was the best at whatever it was I was doing. If I was, you know, it could have been the most mundane thing in the world, but if, you know, fixing my garden or whatever, if it didn't look perfect to me, it would just really dog me. Those are the little things. Day by day, I would begin to put those together and think, that's kind of sounding more like me. But the way I really know I'm a three is when I get stressed, the way I handle that is just to get busy doing something that takes away the feelings. Threes are feeling repressed. We take in a lot of information with our feelings, but we don't use our feelings to make sense of that information or to figure out what to do with it. What we do is push the feelings away so we can get to it and be achieving with something.
So you see on the five A's, allowing. So type threes very clearly need to allow their feelings.
And that's but hard.
It's very hard. It's very hard. To sort of round it out, when you're not checking off tasks and planning, what are you doing?
That's all I do.
This is why we ask the types the same question. Okay, if you're not a type three, is that what you're always doing? Right, those of you that aren't type three, are you checking off tasks all day long? I mean, we all are to some degree, we have to exist. But Lee's doing it in a different way. But you begin to really see, even just this morning, like, wouldn't you love to be in a support and study group with Glenn, and that all he brings, I need what he has. I desperately want to hear his perspective. I need to see some of those big feelings, and so he's testing it out for me. I don't like that. I'm a head type. But if Glenn's doing it, then maybe I can. Glenn is sort of leading the way. Same with Lee. Lee is leading the way with getting things done and achieving and pushing away feelings. So you could see how being in a group with her would be awesome. Like the group be planned, we'd get there, the tech would work, she doesn't have the questions prepared, but she's gonna perform. So I love the way that this brings us all together. And so I really don't like what my youngest child says about the binary reductionist tool. And I'm like, you just need to spend some more time with it. So is there something else I haven't asked you on short notice about the Enneagram, since you studied it, and about being a three particularly?
There's so much to it. I don't know. I do pay attention to the wings on either side of me, the two-wing, the helper, and the four-wing, the idealist or the romantic, and try to use those models more to help me get out of my, checking off the list all the time. Hmm. So that's, anyway.
Okay. I don't know. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Sarah's using her one wing to make the presentation perfect, which I appreciate. You know, for those of you that have studied it, a three, the achiever, and one, the perfectionist, can look a little bit alike. But I would say a three wants it done. It doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, they don't want it sloppy, but they want to move to the next thing. And there's a fast-pacedness to a three of getting it done and getting to the next thing. And sort of the more the merrier, the more they can do, the better. My daughter is a three. We have three kids. The more the merrier for type three, but not so much with type one. And Sarah's going to really hit on that next week, so we don't need to do that today. But those of you that are ones know that here she comes, because it's not perfect.
Not perfect.
And she's not going to like that. So we have two type twos. And so Sarah recruited Michelle Krell. Is that how you say your last name? And she's going to come be our first two, and then Lucy Painter's going to close us out with the second type two, and then we'll do a little preview of next week. So you want to come up? Type two, if we can't have the slide, is the giver or the helper.
We have the slide.
Oh, we can have the slide. Sarah says we can, so we will. There you go. To get, you must give. They tend to be sort of into pride and flattery. They love to be indispensable. And they often think they are indispensable. So you can see how you might give them the feedback that they're indispensable. And they might feel that way to people that aren't type two, but that's actually not the best, healthiest thing for them, because guess what happens to the two? They end up getting depleted. But they believe to get, you must give. And so for them to stop giving, like if you say to me, you're tired, you need to stop giving, I'm like, okay, and I'll stop. Because I'm not a two. But for the two, they really feel like they might not make it. Like, what on earth am I, what is there? Am I okay? Am I going to disappear? And so attuned. I mean, don't you want to be in a group with these people? They're attuned to others' needs. I mean, if we've got even just a two, three, and a four, like, what a great group. We got it. But the two is really going to be looking, almost sometimes seeing the need before the person. And their virtue is humility, which you might think, well, that's crazy, but they can begin to feel like, I am the solution to other people's needs. And if you're a two in here, I see some people nodding. I am the solution. But one other gift of the Enneagram, and I think how we know God, is God is a God of community, but he's also a God of individuality. And so if we overhelp, we rob the other person of the chance for them to be dealing with God. I work a lot with parents, and I'm very, very interested in this tool. I cannot tell you how many times I've had a parent show up in my office, and they say, I'm helping my child do this. And I'm like, well, how's that going? And they're like, well, my child doesn't want me to help them. And I'm like, well, I mean, if the child's not 1 year old, can you stop? And the twos, particularly, this often seems to be the mom. No. I'm like, but your child's telling you they don't need your help. They don't want you to pack their soccer bag. They don't want you to plan their menu or whatever, whatever. So you could see how this tool can get very practical. So here's your microphone. So Michelle has volunteered. She is prepared, I see. So I'm going
to
let her say what she... Yeah. Okay. So how does the need for love and approval play a role in your life and or thoughts?
So I think, is this good? I haven't held a mic like this for a while. So
you have to hold it pretty close.
I'll skip to that one. All right, so for the twos, the key motivation is being loved, which to me kind of felt weird when I first learned about it. And just for a little background, I've only been doing the Enneagram since last fall with Sarah. The young adults have, we did kind of find out who you are, and then now we're doing more of a deep dive into it. So I've been studying it a lot in the last few months, but I haven't had years of practice with it. So the key motivation is feeling fully loved. And so I think I'm really good at showing love to those around me because of it. So, I mean, it really plays a role in my life because it makes me who I am. People around me will see me as that welcoming person. Sarah's talked about that a lot, too, as far as, oh, wow, you make people feel so much more welcomed than other types. And to me, I guess I haven't always seen it that way. I'm like, well, I'm just being me. Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem unique or wasn't something I noticed before we started studying this. So I think that really plays a huge role in my life. But then also the whole need for approval. Sometimes that's good. If I'm at a place where here are the things that need to be done, and I'll be like, well, yeah, I'm going to do those, and you'll approve of me, and just knock all those out. But it can also be bad because if I'm working in a group, I have to really make sure I stand up for myself because I think the need for approval can make you just a huge pushover. And then one of the things that if you read anything on Enneagrams, you see that twos have a lot of resentment. So I might be in a group, and I might be planning something. I'm like, oh, that idea's good, and we go with it. And I'm like, wow, I didn't stand up for what I truly wanted, but I already agreed to this other thing. So it can build up a little bit of resentment in that way as well, which is a whole more complicated, probably longer Enneagram class to really hit on those things. But yeah, I think just the whole love and approval, it makes twos kind of who they are, and there's good sides and bad sides, and we need to learn to really love ourselves. I just recently read something where, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, something you hear all the time in church. And most people are like, wow, I really need to focus on loving my neighbor. But for twos, it's like, okay, but the other half of that, you need to focus more on loving yourself because that's actually harder than loving your neighbor is. So,
interesting. What else, since you have notes, what else would you want us to know about the twos from your point of view?
So, let's see.
Or not.
Are you asking other questions, or you want me to just kind of?
The other one was more, what are you doing when you're not looking for ways to give to others?
Oh, yeah. So I liked how everyone else approached that, because my first thing was like, yeah, sleeping, like Glenn said. I mean, I've done a lot of analyzing the things I'm involved in, and the stuff that I thought was more for me. I really love being involved in organizations at the church and helping out on different committees. I really like to be involved in Junior League. And for me, those were like my things. They made me happy. I'm out with a group. I'm doing something. But then when you look at all those things that I'm involved in, it's all ultimately helping someone else. I love to host friends and family and be that person for friends and family to come talk to. I'm always there if you need something. My husband's family owns a chicken farm, and I've helped up on that chicken farm so many times in the last 7 years. Because if they need something or they're down manpower, I'm over there to help. So it's definitely, yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of my life, and it's hard to really look at things that I do that don't involve helping someone else, even if ultimately it's some of it selfish. I know that this makes me happy. Being involved in certain things, it's going to make me happy, and I looked at it as something for myself, but it's really kind of not. So, yeah. One of the things I want to work on and kind of grow towards now that I'm learning how to use the Enneagram to kind of develop yourself.
Anything else you want us to know before?
Oh, I guess one thing with that question, too. So the way she worded it when she sent it to us was, what are you doing when you're not looking for ways to give to others? For me, I was like, well, I want to clarify. I'm not always out there searching to help other people. For me, like, the seeing how other people feel really is part of the Enneagram, too. I'll notice things that other people don't. So for me, there'll be these red flags waving saying this person needs help in this way, whether it's a volunteer, whether it's emotional help. I see that, and so I'm not actually out searching for it, but once I see it, it's kind of like if you pass a hurt puppy in a box, you can't just keep walking because you can't just leave it there, so you have to get involved and help. So I think that was really something that stood out to me with that question specifically.
All right.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
All right, thank you. One thing is that often this is led with panels, and so ideally we would have 5 twos and 5 threes so that you can see the type structure and how they lead is not their personality. So you're going to get a little taste of that. Lucy Painter is our other two, and she's going to come up, and she doesn't have notes.
No.
but I can still ask you the questions. Would you like the questions?
Certainly.
Okay. How does the need for love and approval play a role in your life and thoughts?
Well, I have been working with the Enneagram for about 20 years when Nancy Dunn introduced it to me. And I identified myself immediately, and I said, oh, my gosh, I don't want to be a two. All my life, I have been a people pleaser. All my life, I think I have felt that I needed to serve and take care of in order to be loved. But also really important for me as a two is to be in a relationship with you, to know you, to have a deep understanding. And so it's been a life's journey.
Okay, and then what are you doing when you're not looking for ways to give or help?
That takes premeditation. And what I have learned about myself is I have to step back, be out of relationship, be alone, and actually as a tool for getting or feeling the presence of God more than a two would. A two is so daggum busy taking care of everybody. How could we even know that there's God is out there in the midst of things? Right. So for me, stepping back and just being present and letting God speak to me in the various ways God speaks to all of us is something I can actually do on occasion.
Well, and for twos, remember the five A's, allow. So first, she has to allow the space for God to even show up. But you heard both twos say versions of I need to love others to be loved. But really, the message, I think, of God for each type is you are whole already. So God loves Lucy, and everyone else here knows this. If she's not helping others, how does God feel about her? He loves her. Right? I mean, it's just there all the time for her to access, but she has to access it. A really funny story, she doesn't know I'm going to tell this, but when we first joined St. Paul's, the binary reductionist child was turning four. And Lucy was the Christian ed director, so you could see how, in her case, I think the vocation fit her type, helping. And it was the tradition at St. Paul's at the time to give a child a birthday cake, a little miniature cake from Harris Teeter. And I don't know if y'all have a lot of children, but got much, much, much less strict about everything down the line. So number three, we were just like, cake, whatever. We didn't really watch his food. We didn't really watch him. We tried, but, you know, we were much less nervous and uptight. And so he gets this cake, and he's so excited. He gets in the car, and his siblings are kind of like, wow, that looks good. Are you going to give us a piece? And he's like, sure. And we're walking into the house, and he drops the cake into the garage, and he is sobbing. And I was not the kind of mother to run interference. It was, and go back to the Christian ed director and say, we need another cake. It's like, get over it. But it just broke my heart the way he was so upset. And I reached out to Lucy and said, you know, he dropped his cake, and she produced another one. So that's just a nice story. But it really does. I didn't know about the Enneagram so much then, but it was definitely a nice story of that, and he got another cake. So last week, if you were here, Dixon agreed to do one of the workshops I went to is called Deepening Spiritual Awareness. So it's a whole weekend on the spirituality of the Enneagram. So it sort of moves beyond here are the numbers, here are the panels, and it gives you 3 days of tools if you're really interested. But something that really moved me in that workshop was the use of the repeating question. And so the way the repeating question worked was the presenter asks basically the vice and asks, so for me, they would say, how are you fearful? And you keep asking it over and over, but the gig is that as the asker, I can't give her any feedback. All I say is thank you. And we just keep doing that. And we're just like last week, we're a little short on time. So we'll do it for about a minute or two, but you'll get the gist of it. And then we flip and do the virtue. So I know some of you have to leave, but I think people will agree that watching Dixon do this was pretty powerful. So if you can stay, you're welcome to stay. Okay, Lucy, are you ready for your question?
Sure.
Okay. How are you prideful?
I'm prideful in that I think I can do everything.
Thank you. How are you prideful?
I'm prideful in that I don't need any help.
Thank you. How are you prideful?
I am prideful because I don't consider other people's need to be doing that particular task. I will take it and do it anyway.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right, you don't want to do your virtue question?
Okay.
Let's let her do the virtue. I mean, she just.
Okay.
The virtue question is, what is humility to you?
Humility to me is standing back and observing the qualities in other people and not focusing on what I should be doing. I think the sin of a two is pride, and we are full of it. So humility for me is sort of standing back.
Thank you. What is humility to you?
Humility to me is letting go. Letting go of having to declare it right if we're in relationship, but just allowing.
Thank you. So you can see how the repeating questions designed in more psychological terms to get the person more to their unconscious. And you can see if you repeat it, we repeated it for 4 minutes. Each question, you eventually were like, I already told you, like I have nothing else to say. But it's to get you sort of, you know, laid bare and down like that. So I appreciate your attention. I feel like we're really trying to cover a lot of information. I want to leave you with this thought, and then Sarah's going to pick up next week with the body types, which are 8, 9, and 1. So we've done head types, heart types, and body types. And part of integrating this work is whatever type you are, to bring your whole self, head, heart, and body to bear, because that's who God's made us to be. He's a God of all three. He's not a God of the head or a God of the heart or a God of the body, and he's probably so much more than all those three. But in our human, finite way of thinking, that's one way for us to put it together. But this I love, and if you just want to practice one thing this week, focus of attention. So your pattern, whatever your type, is what you pay attention to, and your energy follows it. And so to just begin to think, I don't have to, so Lucy doesn't have to put all her energy towards helping. She might shift, and she's done a lot of work, but she might shift and put some of her attention towards allowing herself time to be with God. And so her energy is going to follow that, and that's going to be the beginning of, we don't want to talk about changing the pattern, we want to talk about loosening the pattern. The minute you start talk about changing it, you're going to be into this sort of fail, success, right, wrong, and it's just not that simple, as I think most people in this room are older than 20 know that it's a complicated journey. So we met this week, and the church is going to order an Enneagram library for those of you who like to study, and there will be books that you can check out. There are more sheets up there. Some of them are the test, the paragraph test, which I think is partially arrogant. I think what we're doing here is the best way, is that listening to people talk about their type really does help you to identify, but I think the paragraphs are a start. I think the multiple choice online test is probably the least correct, but again, it's a start to have you think about it. I mean, it typed me as a two. Like, what Southern woman has not seemed helpful at some point? I mean, I'm not unhelpful, but I'm not. A funny story was, New Orleans isn't completely Southern. I don't know what it is. It's something else. And I remember moving to North Carolina, and like at the end of the meal, all the women would jump up and start cleaning the kitchen. And I was pretty young, and I was like, that's a lot of people in the kitchen. Like, am I supposed to do this too? Like, I don't know what to do. So I would kind of jump up and start cleaning the kitchen because I felt like I should, but I wouldn't necessarily be wired like that. And if you come to my house for dinner, I'm not expecting, like, everyone to jump up. And finally, a friend last week who's actually a male said, I need you to let me help you do something. And I was like, okay, you're not having fun? He goes, I'm having fun. I just need a job. It's like, okay, you can have a job. So I think the paragraph is a pretty good, I think, doing this. And then again, if you didn't sign the list last week and you have an interest in a similar format to Nancy Dunn, who, as far as I can tell, and she shared with me, has been doing that for about 20 years, hers is a daytime group what we're thinking is that some people either can't or don't want to come during the daytime, so we're thinking of something similar that would be at night, and so we're just trying to gauge. So if you sign your email to that, when that gets off the ground, you'll simply get an email. You're not committing or anything. So thank you so much for your attention, and I hope you have a good week.